thank you for
honestly, I mean, I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing. You know, I'm not.
Well, I thought
I'm
you
not,
can.
I'm not going to allow to be intimidated. You know, myself to be intimidated. That's for sure.
I can say I've had mild harassment, and I can honestly say I brought that on myself.
Mm-hmm.
By going into subject matter that I knew would not be considered acceptable for radio. Just information I don't think that they want released yet. And those kind of things, I think they're going to harass you. I don't think they're going to come kill you or anything like that. I think they're just going to let you know, hey, we're paying attention.
That they're aware.
But I don't think it's any more than that. And so you're doing a lot of quality research. You're spending a lot of your own time, a lot of your own money. You're getting with these people. And you know, you're going through by case, by case, by case. And by doing so, you're learning more information. You get more pieces of the puzzle. And you know, they're going to listen. They might come sit and listen to you speak at Laughlin. They might be listening tonight on the radio show.
Sure.
They could be anywhere. Like, there's no need to come physically pick you up, take you, because you're willing to share this information. All you have to do is ask.
Right.
You know, which I'll shut up and let you talk for a little while.
Now. Oh, no, that's it. No, we're having a great conversation here. Even because it's interesting that people for all these years I've been doing this, I mean, people have asked me, do you feel like you've been harassed, you know, at all because of your work, and I honestly say no.
And I think that's because you're so forthcoming. I really do. I don't think there's any reason.
Also, Joe, because I'm not out there applying for Freedom of Information Act requests.
That's actually a damn good point.
You know, so I think because I'm not trying to get into government, you know, contracts and government, what do you call it, documents.
Yeah.
And like a lot of my colleagues do, and I really, you know, admire their tenacity and bravery for doing that, because I think that's where we run into trouble is when we start trying to get information that the government's been trying to hide from us for so long.
Yeah, and they do get testy about that. I do stay away from that myself. I don't know my own business. I don't want to get them out of me.
Right, exactly. So that part of it, you know, I'm just dealing with you know, with the abductees, experiencers, so I think they pretty much kind of keep their distance and they're just watching, that's all.
And I think that's what they're doing. And like I said a few minutes ago, I mean, if they want to know something, they can come get in an audience, or they could call into the show tonight, or they could come
sure.
to one of their conferences and say, Yvonne, I'd like to ask you this question. And as long as it wasn't something ridiculous, you'd ask them and answer them, and to the best of your knowledge. So, like I said, I don't really think there's any real need for them to do that, and you're not downing the government because of the aliens, you know, which some of our other colleagues do, then I'm sure that gets people in trouble. When you start ragging on the government, against
oh,
all
sure,
their
of course.
You
yeah.
know, so I just leave them alone. I'm sure they have a part to play, just like everybody else, but I'm more interested in why the aliens are abducting our people. I do think it's wrong, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if the government is truly abducting people, I do think it's wrong, but I got to tell you, I'm more curious to why. I know why the government's doing it. I'm more interested in why the aliens are doing it. What do you think, Yvonne? You think they're coming to for any specific reason or just to learn?
Are you talking about now the aliens?
Yes, about the aliens, not the government. We'll leave them poor guys alone.
Yeah. You know, I've been asked this question over the last 17 years, and, you know, I don't have the answer to that. None of us do, really. I think we speculate of because of the experiences that people are having, ongoing experiences. You know, I have said in my lectures, and I believe I've said it in my book, and I was writing in between the chapters, and why I wrote this book, what the meaning is of what these aliens are doing. But I think they are definitely, of course, they're studying us. Why they're studying us? That's the ultimate question. You know, will this ever stop? We don't know. They definitely have their own agenda. I when people have asked me as I've lectured throughout, you know, when I'm in Europe or in other parts of the United States, is if they're here to save us from ourselves. And I say no. I really don't think that we're going to get any help from them to save us from ourselves, and to save us from the economy that, you know, we're dealing with now and any of our other problems. I think in one way they're not allowed to interfere with us. I think they're here to observe us. They have been for a very long time. They definitely have their own agenda of why they're experimenting with human beings while they're taking their DNA. I do think that the hybrid program is very central to all of this.
Yeah.
And then again, what's going to happen with all these hybrids? You know, why are these hybrids being created, and where are they ultimately going to go? Are they among us now, as many people think that they are? So, you know, it's just it's an ongoing. It's what do we call it? An enigma. It truly is a huge, huge question. Many of my serial members have said, you know, we don't want it to stop because we want answers. We don't want them to just go away and not tell us why they're doing this, as they feel that they deserve answers. And I do, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think they deserve answers. But, you know, it's interesting you brought that up, because all the contractors I've talked to, and let me say this, because maybe there's a difference between contractors and inspectors. All the contractors I've talked to don't want the strangers to end. Some of them aren't all that great experiences, ladies and gentlemen, but they really... I don't know why. I mean, there's different reasons for different people, but they really don't want to be in it. And I'll even go as far as saying some of my older contactees that where their experiences have been kind of stretched out now because they're in their 40s and 50s and they're not being inducted as frequently, kind of miss it. So, you know, because it's not always bad and it's not all bad. It's just there are some bad things, there are some good things,
mm-hmm.
and stuff in between. So, you know, but now abductees, if I ask a first-timer, you know, somebody who's come to us that's fresh and just realizing that they're having they a lot of times will tell me, oh, yeah, I wanted to quit. But I'm sure, but I notice even with them, when it does quit for a while, they kind of like, well, wait a minute. I think they don't think this special. I'm not sure what it is, to be honest with you, but...
Well, I've had that too, Joe. I've had, you know, serial members. I've had some of my clients that I've worked with over the years have said... that, of course, it started out frightening because they didn't know what it was, what they were experiencing. But once they were able to get a handle on it and realize, okay, you know, I'm being contacted by, you know, these beings from wherever they are, they feel in a way that they've come to, you know, they come to grips with what they're experiencing, and that. And I'm sure you've heard this, that many of them have this longing where they say, even as children, that they want to go, quote-unquote, home. You know, they look up in the stars and, you know, they feel that many of them feel like they really don't belong here, that they
right.
that they don't belong to their parents, their Earth parents. And I believe I did cover that in one or two of my chapters in Chosen, how some of these people felt about that.
It's true. I mean, I've got quite a few of them tell me that either they don't feel like they belong here on the planet, or they don't
mm-hmm.
feel like they belong with their parents.
Exactly.
Or it's just a general sense that they just don't belong in this type of environment. And it is weird, and you don't know if that's because there might be a little hybrid in them, or if that's part of whatever they're working towards, and they have been here a long time, so... No telling how to even guide these family lines along. I'm sure they're guiding these family lines for a particular outcome. It's hard to say what that is. And I agree, if they were here to help us, I mean, outright help us, they've been here 6,000 plus years, we would be a much more enlightened species than we are today. And truly, if they were here to destroy us 10,000 years ago, it would have been quite easy to wipe the planet out.
Sure.
Even in today's standards, I think it would be quite easy for them to wipe the planet out. So, I don't think they're here for either one. That's why I always say they have their own agenda and we're part of their agenda. It's just figuring out what part we play and why they need us. That's something else I find interesting, that they actually need us.
And, you know, whether we get those answers, I mean, that's very hard to say. They certainly haven't been forthcoming with people about why they have been abducting them. You know, they really have not received, when the abductees have asked them, you know, why are you doing this, or where are you from, or any question, they seem to give them a roundabout answer or not answer at all.
Oh, yeah. That's one of their favorites, just kind of ignore you.
Exactly. So, you know, whether we do get those answers. And, you know, it's hard to say. I hope we do. I really do in our lifetime. I hope we do. But, you know, truly anybody stands up and says, I know what the answer is, and this is what they do, and this is what, you know, they're just, you know, I've met people this way that have come out and stated, you know, that they know exactly what this is and where they're from and what their agenda is. And, you know, like Roger, my good friend and colleague, Dr. Roger Lear, says, run the other way when somebody tries to tell you this is what it is. Because really, you know, in all honesty, none of us know. I mean, we're all, quote-unquote, called experts in the field, but we really don't know what the answers are yet.
Well, I tell it to people all the time. People say, well, you know what the agenda is. I said, I tell you what. I said, I have speculation on what several agendas are, but as far as exactly why or what. I mean, there's some things I kind of know because of all the cases we handle, but there's some things I'm kind of still completely and utterly lost about. You know, and I do understand a lot of the basic procedures and a lot of the younger stuff. We've got enough contactees now that we have patterns and criteria and stuff. So that's not hard, but what they're actually physically doing and why they're doing it, no. Speculating, because they're not telling anybody anything.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree with you. If somebody's telling you they know exactly what they're here for and what they're doing, I'd be worried. You know, because there's things that we work on premises in the organization on a couple of things that they may be doing, but we can't prove it. And it is sheer speculation, and we'd be just as wrong as we are right. So we're just hoping that there's, because some of the evidence we have suggests that they might be moving in a particular direction. But that's not even stuff we consider for the general public yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're thinking that's for us. Hopefully we'll find something, learn something from them. But, and I know, I'm sure you do. You pick up bits and pieces of information that kind of, you know, you'll be moving along a set way, and then all of a sudden the contactee will tell you something. You think, well, what the hell? Where did this come from?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it's just that we have, you know, we have a lot of work to do ahead of us. And like I said, hopefully in our lifetime, you know, we will get answers. But we do know, though, that we feel that we, you know, that the hybrid program is pretty central to this.
Yeah.
And I do talk about the hybrids in the book Chosen, and you know, the last chapter talks about a woman who feels that she may have met an alien being, a hybrid, back in the mid-60s. At the time, you know, there was no point of reference for her, but she just thought that this person was very different. And so I thought it was, you know, very important to put it in the book, because I have heard from many experiencers lately that they feel that they have come in contact with them here on Earth.
But, you know, that's weird you bring that up, because I have had a few people recently. You know, first we used to always get that Men in Black stuff, and people always said they were hybrids, but they just weren't good enough hybrids living amongst the general population. True or not true, I don't know. I mean, I've seen some weird stuff that I got to kind of wonder about, but there's no way of knowing. But I have recently, and of all people, who was it that got me thinking about this? What's her name? Oh, Rachel's Eyes. What's her name? Anyway, she got me to thinking about hybrids being introduced into our society, you know, being put in colleges or being put into schools. And they still may look a little bit different, but they're close enough that most people are just going to think, ah, there's something wrong with them, they're okay. And being that this has been going on for so long, you would think somewhere along the line they would have started introducing these hybrids into our population. Of course, that scares me more than anything else. Because then I'm like, why are they doing this? Are they going to breed us out? Are they going to interbreed them in with us? Or what's the outcome going to be from all of this? Is the daylight out of me.
As I was writing Chosen, you know, I was thinking about the hybrids, and you know, because you think, you know, they've been producing these hybrids for so many years. You know, first they're shown, the abductees are shown hybrid babies, and then they see the toddlers, and they see the, you know, adolescents. Well, they're, you know, these hybrid beings are growing up, and they have to go somewhere, you know, and I think that's maybe part of their agenda, is to incorporate them among us.
They might. It's weird. They definitely seem to be putting them into our population. At least recently, they seem to be putting them into our population. They may have been doing it a lot longer. We do not know it. And then that goes to makes you wonder if they have, and they have been doing it over the last 30 or 40 years. Or well, let me put it this way. Is Obama a hybrid? Or was Bush a hybrid? That could be even scarier, you see.
Well, I know some people think that Bush is a reptilian.
I've heard that one myself.
Right, but of course I don't put any weight on that. But I mean, it's just you know, hilarious, I think. But no, I mean, we just don't know. You know, they could be, like you say, they could be right there sitting next to us, and we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I had this little young boy in my audience when I was lecturing in Roswell last year, and he must have been about maybe 10 years old, but the questions he was asking were just way beyond how a 10-year-old would even pose a question. And he looked, when I looked at him, he had little reddish hair and kind of a little bit of a bushy kind of sparse hair. And it was very difficult. It's very difficult to describe him, but he looked a little different. And when I mentioned this to somebody, he was in Ron Regeer's lecture as well. And he said the same thing, that he came up with some questions that you wouldn't expect from a 10-year-old. And later on, we speculated, you know, maybe this little boy could have been a hybrid, you know, sitting there in our audience. It was very, you know, I hadn't thought about that for a few months, but just our conversation right now made me think about that. And I wish I had the chance to talk to him a little bit more. And he wasn't there the next day, unfortunately, because I was going to try to see if I could engage him in a conversation. But one of the attendees had taken a couple pictures of him, and I gave her my card to ask her to email him to me, but I haven't received anything. But it was just a very strange experience for me to see this young boy and then asking these very intelligent questions. One of them was about one of the triangular-shaped marks that I showed during my lecture, and I forget exactly what the question was. It was about something about, you know, have the scientists taken a serious look at this, or it was something that the way he asked it. I mean, I was just blown away by, you know, his age and his intelligence. So that was, as I mentioned before, that was an experience for me.
Well, he might have come looking for you. You know, I've heard other researchers, I'm not going to mention their names because most of them have asked me not to say anything, but I've had a couple tell me, and just in the last 2 years, by the way, which I find odd, that they've been approached by what they would probably consider a hybrid. People, as they would put it, beyond their age or beyond their means, they seem to be either much more intelligent than they should be or just out of sync or out of whack with everything else around them. And it's just been weird, and it's been some fairly famous ufology companies in the last 2 years, and I've just been kind of surprised by it. They may be actually reaching out.
Well, I'm hoping I'm going to be lecturing in Roswell again this year, and I'm hoping that I see this young boy again, you know, because he would be easy for me to spot. You know, I think I would recognize him right away. But you're right. You know, maybe he was sitting right there in front.
You're a grown man this year too. Got to watch him hybrid.
Will you be in Roswell?
I'm gonna try to be in this year. If everything goes right, I'll probably be down there. Since where are you gonna be speaking at the museum this year?
At the museum, with your listeners out there, I just want to, you know, make sure that they try to get to Roswell. I mean, it is an excellent conference. It goes on for about 5 days during the 4th of July week. And if you've never been to the UFO Museum in Roswell, you've got to go and just, you know, once in your life and take a look at all the work they've done there, all the research and all the wonderful history that they're putting on display from, you know, the 1947 crash. Julie Schuster, the director of the museum, has done a wonderful job there, you know, with her late father, who was the founder of it, with Glenn Dennis. They've done a wonderful job, and they put on, you know, a great conference, and I'm looking forward to it, and I hope, you know, I see all of your listeners down there.
There's usually quite a few go. I mean, I know for the 60th anniversary, 300 or 400 showed up. Last year, from what I was told, about 125, 150 listeners or ICARP members showed up. So I always know we're going to get some that come down here no matter what. And then, of course, if we're advertising that, you know, members or directors will be in town, we'll be quite a few more coming in. So
mm-hmm.
I always find it interesting. So I'm actually trying to get to Roswell this year. I'm hoping Stephen does X Conference this year. I was talking to him about that. Because if he does, I'll actually be speaking at issue. So that'll be kind of nice.
Now, did he mention putting on an X Conference?
He's trying to. He's trying to. He said he's a little leery. Right now, he's still got it planned for April 17th, 18th, I think he told me. But he's a little worried about the economy, and it's, you know, it's only 3 months away. So
Oh my gosh! Yes, I mean, he hasn't done it yet. He's got a lot of planning to do.
Well, he always has everything kind of semi-planned, from what I understand. But I don't know. You know, he told me 1 year he had to do it later in the year, so he might have to do it later in the year.
Well, I wish him luck. I know when I went that 1 year, it was a great, great conference.
Oh, I have a blast up there, but I like D.C. too. So. And,
yeah, that was my first time there. Steve did a great job.
You going to be at Laughlin this year?
I am going to try. I will try, Joe, because I love
Laughlin's a lot of
there.
Fun. Yeah. Now, I do know there's going to be, from what I've heard recently, there's going to be 200 or 300, maybe even more than that. I know for sure because a couple of our hosts are going, and they've been telling their audience, like Portal, which has got about 100,000 listeners, so she's going to be bringing quite a few people down with her, and some of the other members will be there as well. And I think,
well, great. Yeah, I'm going to try to make it, and you know, it's great to get together with all of our friends and colleagues.
Yeah.
When
that's why I like going to the conference, just so I can come say hi to you and everybody else.
Definitely.
Go have dinner with people that I don't get to talk to except on the air and things like that.
But if I, you know, if I do go, I'll have my book on hand. I'll have them on hand, of course, in Roswell.
Well, when I get off the air with you tonight, I'm going to order one. So if you see it, I want it signed, but I doubt you'll see it. It'll probably go through the publisher.
Well, definitely, if, you know.
I'll bring it with me. Don't worry. I'll get you to sign it. I'll sign it.
Okay. But, yeah. You can always put a note there. Please have Yvonne sign it. But, oh, definitely. I'd love to sign it for you. And I hope, you know, give me your feedback on it. We're looking to go into a second printing of it. And pretty very, very soon. I'm a couple months behind my schedule, but I am starting to write my second book on the Coronado Island incident in San Diego County, San Diego, California, of a mass abduction that occurred.
I don't know how y'all write. I ask Richard this all the time, how he writes. I'd be lucky if I get one book done. It's killing me. I'm telling you, it's killing me.
Well, I'll tell you, it's painstaking project. I mean, it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and you just write and write and write. I mean, I wrote for months. That's all I did last summer, and I had promised Bob Brown I would get it published in time for last year's Laughlin conference. So it debuted in Laughlin, which I was very proud of, and did very well there and did very well in Roswell.
Well, who's doing the regression thing in Roswell, I mean at Laughlin this year? I thought you did it better than Barbara did, but that's just my own personal opinion.
I'm not sure, Joe. I thought Barbara Lamb would be doing it again, but I believe it's somebody else. Last year it was Dr. Leo Sprinkle.
Yeah, I heard him last year.
But I know Barbara's speaking. She's lecturing, but I'm not sure if she's doing the experiencer sessions. But those are, you know, those were a highlight. I really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah,
I had 40 people every night in there, and you know, standing room only, and it was just wonderful to meet people from all over sharing their experiences. And one night I had my colleague, Dr. David Jacobs, sit in with me. And that was a treat. That was great.
Yeah, that is. Hey, I enjoyed it when I was there. I had a good time. We tried to stay out of it because we didn't want to get a bunch of... we have a tendency when we show up, especially if it's two or three of us, that the focus is shifts, so we try to stay out of it. We'll usually sneak somebody in or something. And because I know we were talking with Barbara, and Linda answered one question, and the next thing I knew, everybody in the place was asking her questions. And so we don't want to do that. If we're invited to do it, we will, but we don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Everybody's trying to establish themselves or do whatever, so we try to stay out of that. But I enjoyed them. I had a lot of fun sitting and listening. You know, I told them we wouldn't bring any press in or anything like that. So.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah, and that's where, and that's how the CIRO meetings are, and I think that's why CIRO members have felt safe, because we've not invited press in at all, unless we did something special. We did mock meetings for a couple of television specials over the years, but we never, in our monthly meetings, never allowed the press to come in and, you know, and sit in on any of the meetings.
Well, no, that's a good thing. I mean, see, I'm fortunate because I'm a contactee myself, so when a lot of times when I'm attending, and I have had people ask me this before when I was at meetings, well, I know you host that show. I said, yes, I do, but you'll never hear me talk about any of this on there. And you won't either. You'll never, because we host meetup groups down here locally.
Oh,
never,
yes.
You'll
yes,
never
I
hear
you
me,
telling
yeah, you'll never hear
me that.
Talk about them. Yeah, and they're pretty good groups, too. It's a nice group of people, and they're steadily growing. But I won't talk about those on the air because that's not what it's for.
Right. And, you know, when I'm lecturing at these conferences, I mean, people come up to me and ask for private sessions. So those conferences keep me pretty busy.
Yeah, I can imagine they do. Well, yeah, because, well, it's like when you host the whitchamacallit, you know people are going to be wanting you to do private sessions afterwards. And speaking at any conference, if someone's having or at least thinking they're having an experience, but that's a good thing. It keeps you going. I mean, to a point, it's a good thing, I guess.
Well, I mean, but it goes to show, Joe, is how many people out there that, you know, need the support. They need to find some answers, for sure. So this is a ongoing phenomenon.
Now, I ask you this, too, because you're on the tour a lot, and so a lot of my other friends, they've told me, because it used to be you were preaching to the choir when conferences, there was a lot of repeat, which there still are a lot of repeat, but, you know, in the old days it was 75% of the people you'd see at a conference were repeat. They were, you know, coming back each year and going to other conferences. But a couple of ufologists told me in the last few years they've noticed that they're seeing a lot more fresh faces coming.
Yes.
And that was good to hear. I was glad to hear that.
It's very true. You know, we see especially in Laughlin, you're going to see a lot of the same people, you know, every year. But I've noticed people, and I've spoken to people that have said, you know, this is my first time, my first conference. I've wanted to see what it was all about. You know, other people have had interest. And this is why I've enjoyed lecturing to colleges, because it's, you know, the younger generation, and they're very, very, you know, hungry for this information. And then I love lecturing in Europe because I love hearing about the cases there, which are, of course, are very similar to the cases that I have worked with.
I like to lecture anywhere that they like to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I love taking questions. I always have. I don't know what that is. And I've told this to other people when I'm going to conferences. I told them I would much rather do a Q&A than a lecture, because it's easier for me. I'll do it either way. It's all easy to me, but I just like it. You know, I'll usually do, Roswell, we did, like, I think it was 45 minutes, and then the rest of the time was just answering questions, but I like that. Yeah, I have much more fun that way, and I get a lot more information out there, and I feel like I'm actually contributing more because I'm actually asking questions that people want answers. I don't know. One of those.
Well, you're interacting, you know, it's the interaction with your audience, which I always think is a positive thing.
Yeah.
I enjoy that as well.
Speaking of that, I'll probably get emails tonight because I didn't open up the lines for calls. Sorry, guys, I only had it for an hour tonight, so I'm not sharing. But.
Oh, well, but I want to thank the listeners out there for whenever I'm on the show for tuning in. And I'm going to be working on that second book, and I'm getting ambitious. I mean, I might work on my second and third book at the same time.
Dang,
we'll
girl.
See how that is. You know, I might be a little bit too ambitious, but but be sure to let, you know, let your listeners know, and I want to remind them that if they'd like to purchase a copy of Chosen, that they could go to my website, www.wysmith.com, and, you know, in order it through there, and if they like it signed, you know, they can put a note in, they could send an email to my publisher, and you know, or to me, and I would be more than happy to personalize it for them. I mean, it's been very exciting to publish my first book. It's just been it's been very well received. I'm very proud of it.
I can't wait to read it, and I'm glad to see you putting one out, because I know what kind of nightmares they are.
And I've had, you know, I had reviews in there from my, you know, friends and colleagues, Stan Friedman, Don Schmidt wrote the foreword for me. Just Paula Harris. It's just been wonderful to have the participation of so many of my friends and colleagues, and to endorse the book.
You know, Paul and I were talking about you just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh yeah, we miss each other. We have to get together. She and I are just.
Well, she was actually on someone else's show, and we were talking about.
Oh well, we have so much fun when we travel and lecture
together.
Oh, I imagine
y'all do.
Yeah.
Because y'all both have great personalities, so it's got to be a blast.
Yeah, well, we have a great time.
Because she's a kick. I get a kick out. She paid me one of the best compliments on somebody else's show a couple months ago. I was just floored. I just happened to be tuning in when Karen Dolan's show, actually.
Oh.
She said they were talking about alien abduction. You know, Polly used to not talk about alien abduction.
Usually not,
and
yeah.
Somebody had asked her about it, and she actually quoted me and said that's who I would go to. And I like to fell out of my damn chair. Because she got mad at me for a whole year for making her talk about alien abductions on my show one time.
Well, because she always said, you know, that's not my expertise.
Yeah.
And she goes, I'm a, you know, investigative journalist. And that's true, you know.
She is.
But she has, you know, had some cases come to her. And I told her, you know, there's a reason for everything.
Yeah, there is.
So.
And they're looking for it for some reason. But there's also things that she's lucky. She was associated with John Mack. She's associated with you,
yes.
With me, with several other key abduction research. And she's one of the few people that actually are. I've never really thought about this before, but there's only a few of us that are associated with everybody. I happen to be because I do radio, and that's the only reason. If it was just a research thing, I would probably know half of them and not the other half. But because I do research and radio, then, yeah, I'm lucky I get to talk to everybody. But Paula's like that. There's a few of them out there that actually have either everyone's ear or everyone's eye, and it's interesting. Not very many of them, but it's kind of cool. So maybe it is one people are coming to. Yeah. Or maybe it's just the next phase in what she's supposed to be doing. I mean,
that's
writing books, so that's the next phase in what you're doing.
It's just, you know, when I was writing Chosen, it was just, you know, wanting to get the information out there, wanting to keep bringing this out into the open. That's what we need to keep doing. People that I've, you know, my neighbors, people that I work with that have never, you know, thought about this subject or never have had an experience or don't remember one, but they're very curious. And then when they meet you and they know that you're a normal, credible person, but yet you do this work, I mean, that really piques their interest. So I think, Joe, you know, we're doing some good work.
I think there's a lot of good stuff going on, right? I actually have to say, for being in ufology, this is the time. If you want to be in it, this is the time to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really good researchers out there. There's much more specialized research going on these days. You're not having, like you did 30 or 40 years ago, when one person was looking into 80 things. Now you have one person looking into one thing with five dinghies, but primarily one thing. And so you're getting a much better quality research. And you know, like we've done, we've visited some of the old cases and changed things around, put stamps on them, whether they were actually alien abductions or something else. And that's caused a little controversy. Matter of fact, George Norrie told me that there is no way he would ever think of Betty and Barney Hill any different than the way he did. And then at the end of the show, he was like, damn. But I laid it hard onto him. There was just some things that... I was very fortunate about 10 years ago, or not even that long, about 8 years ago, a friend of mine had a complete copy of the Betty and Barney Hill regression tape. And he see.
Oh.
And when I sat down and listened to him, Yovan, I realized that there was something else more here than what we originally thought about. So when I was on Coast, I used it as a chance to put it out to the general public. And you know how it is. These theories are always hard to get across. You know, you have to deal with this yourself. So wait, what's the second book going to be? You already told me that.
Well, the second book is going to be about the mass abduction on Coronado Island.
I remember that.
It was about 11 of the serial members that were involved. And the third book is probably going to be chosen, too, because I have, you know, more cases that I'd like to share that I did not have a chance, the time to put into the first chosen. So that's why I think, you know, I might just start writing. Because once you start writing, I mean, I get lost in my writing, and I think I might be able to put both of the manuscripts together.
Well, that's excellent. That's excellent. I can't wait to read it because, you know, like I told you, I'm working on one myself, so I'll actually read it. Maybe it'll help me get my brain. I've done 20 hours of audio tapes. I did it on the air, matter of fact, at shows. I went through the different types of aliens, different types of abductions, 20 hours of audio so that I could actually go through. I'm cheating, Yovan, okay? I could actually go through and pick and choose what I wanted.
Well, sure, anything that will help you put it together. I mean, I'll tell you, it's not an easy task. It's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. You know, there's many times I wanted to just say, you know, I can't do this. It's just too hard. But then it just, something just kept pushing me along. And my manager, John Loggins, was instrumental. Just, you know, he just kept encouraging me and my sons. And so, you know, I had a lot of, you know, people, loving people who said, no, you have to do this. You're supposed to do this. But, you know, anything that to me is worthwhile is not easy. You go through, you know, ups and downs. But once it's out, I mean, I wish you luck. And if you have any, you know, questions or anything, if you need any advice or anything that I can try to help you with, you know, certainly send me an email and, you know, I'll try to help you as much as I can.
And Richard Dolan and Peter Robbins are sweethearts.
He's great, isn't he?
Yeah, because...
Hi, Peter, if you're listening.
Yeah, because, Karen does a monthly special with Peter and Richard now on her show, and I talked to him before the show. And so I've been hitting him up for little, you know, pieces of advice, because Richard's, you know, working on his, too. His is supposed to be out pretty soon as well, and I'm lucky. Like on his book and a couple other books, they're going to actually debut on the network, so I'll know about them right off the bat. And actually, we beat Coast to Coast in the last 2 years. We beat Coast to Coast on like 60 exclusives.
Oh.
But I told George on his show when I was talking with him with Melinda, I'm a little better friends with some of these people than he is.
That's wonderful. I mean, that helps.
That helps. Everything helps.
It's for you.
You know, he is so wonderful about when I come on his show, and I, George, if you're listening or not, I want you to know that, you know, I've been on his show now a couple times, and he actually lets me plug not just my show, but the entire network. And I got to say, we've probably picked up 300,000-400,000 more listeners across the network because of him.
Well, good for you, and good for George. Thank you, George, for everything you do.
Oh, yeah, and so, you know, I got to give credit for that, and you know, he listens when you're talking to him. Hey, he's a nice guy. I get along good with him, so I enjoy doing his show. Yeah, Coast to Coast is a good show. And hopefully we'll see you back on soon.
Thank you, Joe. I really always appreciate hearing from you and Linda and asking me to come on the show.
Oh, well, I enjoy having you. You're easy. I could actually, if I wanted to, just ask you two questions and go get some coffee and dinner. Now, you're not no Stan Friedman now, okay? Stan, and I pick on Stan about this all the time, and God, Stan, don't get mad at me, but I actually, there's a couple of times when I first started on Wake Up USA and I didn't really know him, I would ask him a question, I would get up, get a cup of coffee, make a sandwich, smoke a cigarette, which I don't smoke anymore, and still, he would be answering the question.
Oh, yeah, Stan is great. I mean, I just, you know, he's one of my fans and colleagues.
He's such an easy interview.
He's a wealth of information.
He is, too.
I'll be seeing him in Roswell again.
So Daryl's going to be there, too, at the museum, right? So it should be you and Daryl. And
it'll
I see they're getting a nice little group of regulars there, which I kind of like that.
Yes,
idea,
with Daryl Sims, myself, Stan Friedman, hopefully this year, you know, again, Jesse Marcel Jr., Don Schmidt, and Tom Carey.
Jesse was interesting. I interviewed him just recently, and a couple of my other hosts interviewed him just recently. Kind of a crazy. He's much more quiet than I realized.
I'm sorry, Don Schmidt?
No, Jesse Marcel Jr.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's just way quieter. And I thought he would have been, I thought he was going to be much more outgoing, I guess is what I was expecting. But he was a
Jesse. I mean, he's just a very,
he's a really nice guy.
He's a very nice person. He doesn't really consider himself a researcher or a lecturer, but, he's happy to go and share his story. And, it's been overwhelming for him and his family with everything, all the experiences that he's had since, all the Roswell story broke, and then he decided everybody was writing about him and his story, that's why he wanted to write about his own story and finally came out with his book, which is wonderful.
Yes, it is. And,
so,
he was just really nice and quiet, and I was just surprised. Most ufologists are not what I would consider quiet people. let's just say they got egos. I'm not picking anybody, and everybody knows that you can't be in this field and not have an ego, or you would never make it.
Right.
I got to be honest about it.
You have to let things roll off your back.
Yeah, you can.
Things get rough.
You can't get mad, but you just say, whatever. He was just really quiet. But, see, when I met Yvonne's a sweetie, but y'all don't go harassing her at the conference. You got a serious question, she'll answer, but just don't go harassing her. Well, because, some conferences I notice people are very polite, very manly, come up and ask or talk to you or even ask for an autograph, whatever. And some places they seem to be kind of rude, pushy, and gripey. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's people, different personalities, and you just have to kind of
roll with it.
The more conferences you do, you're going to get the hecklers, and that hasn't happened too many times, but I've had them. And of course, when I've done a lot of television, there were the debunkers,
Oh yeah, now that's got to be involved.
And that's it could get rough, and now I think I've been in the field long enough where I feel like I could handle it a little bit better than when I was a novice.
Yeah. Well, what I've seen you, Amon, tell you, looked quite relaxed, quite laid back. Didn't seem to be.
It was great because I had just come back from Ireland, so
I'm jealous. Ireland didn't mind tell. I'm not talking to you anymore.
Oh, it was just beautiful. The conference was great. Betty Myler, the organizer, she just does a fabulous job. She treats all of her speakers like, royalty. But I had just come in from Ireland, so I had, all this information and, just research from, other people like Malcolm Robinson from Scotland. And how we just share information.
Yeah.
And so, and then I was asked to be on the Montel show. I was there. I had that shot in my arm, after just coming back. And it was great. And Montel is also, he made me relax. I mean, he was a very nice person, very easy to talk to.
And he looks like he has a genuine interest in it.
He does, definitely.
Yeah, that's got to make the interview easier than that.
Definitely. The host is not, fighting you. He's actually interested in the subject.
Right.
And he's not trying to debunk you.
Because I just seen someone on David Letterman, was it? Jeff Peckman, I think. He looked nervous.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, but doing David Letterman would probably make God nervous. So
it just depends on you have to know where your host is coming from, because you don't want to get in that situation where you're going to be pinned down and then they're going to start debunking your work.
Yeah, or just start personally attacking.
You don't want to look foolish up there. That's for sure, because that affects all of us.
Well, I tell our listeners all the time, they don't have to agree with what's being said on the show, and they're allowed to express that respectfully. But as far as attacking, guests, we don't allow for that. I want people to have their own thoughts and their own, and I want people to challenge ufologists, but I don't want them to be rude or obnoxious. There's a way of handling things. I tell people all the time, if you can't have a conversation about cursing, you should just work on that seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to tell you, thanks. You've been fantastic as usual. One more time, go tell them where they can find the book. One more time.
Thank you, Joe. Well, listeners, if you'd like to get a copy of Chosen, you can go onto my website, www.wysmith.com. Go ahead and order it. I'd love for you to have a copy. And as Dr. Roger Lear and I say, let's spread the word. Buy one for your friend for birthdays, for this coming Christmas. Just put it out there. And I'll keep in touch with you, Joe, because I'm, with writing my second and third book, I'm We'll get together, and I'd love to do your show again.
You know what I'm going to do, too, in a couple of months, maybe about 2 months, I'm gonna give Melinda a call. And I'm going to give Linda a call, and I'm going to get you and Melinda on the show together. Because I would like to talk about this abduction and Milad thing with somebody from each side. I just would have.
Sure.
First, I think it would make an excellent show, I'm not going to lie, but I think we might find something there we've been missing. But then again, I could be wrong. Who knows? It's fun. We get to do it on the air, and it's live, and you never know.
Yeah, it'd be great. And Melinda and I have had this discussion at the end of the ceremony. We're just talking back and forth, and, she and I have a respect for each other. So
yeah.
It would be, I think it would be a very
good show. Oh, I give her hell all the time, girl. She's
yeah.
lucky I like her. I give her hell all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, we've had so much fun together on shows that it's kind of scary.
Well, but I hope to see you. I'm trying to see you in Laughlin, but I hope to see you in Roswell.
Roswell, I'm hoping to get to because I really there's some other stuff I want to do down there. It's a good time of year to be down there. You know, Fourth of July. It's still the Fourth of July weekend, right?
Oh yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Usually the
Fourth of
July
weekend.
July 5th through the 8th.
And that's always want to say. So and then Roswell will be putting on their conference. The city of Roswell will be putting on their conference.
Oh yes.
Time. Well, what do they call it? The festival, right? I don't want to get in trouble with Peter, so
it's the conference and festival, but I'm not sure now exactly what.
I'm with you on that. But thanks again for being on, guys, and I will try to see you down in Roswell. Ladies and gentlemen, go down, see Yvonne in Roswell. It'll be worth your time down there. And Roswell's not really expensive to go to. It's one of the less pricey conferences.
Oh, yes, and it's worth your while to get to the International UFO Museum in Roswell.
Yeah. Everybody should see the museum at least once.
You really should.
Now, I'm going to tell y'all a little secret, okay? Inside the museum, they have the biggest database of stuff I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
People get confused when they go in there because, they see the part where they have all the displays and all that. But when you go in the back, when you walk in the front door and you go to the right, they've got all their videotapes and books. They've got an extensive
library.
Right there.
And people come from all over the world to Roswell just to go to the museum. So
yeah.
They've had visitors from all over. So it's worth coming to see.
Yeah, and every major ufologist who's ever existed has been there. So
yeah,
guys, just go check it out. Pay your homage. It's free. I mean, you can make your little donation. I always give them a couple of dollars for letting me roam around and touch stuff. But they always tell me I can come anytime I want because I'm pressed. But still, everybody's always super nice at the Roswell.
Absolutely.
I can't say anything else. Everybody was nice. And I even asked some pretty tough questions, and they were being really nice. I was actually talking to them about the Holt affidavit, and they were very, very nice. So I got to give credit for that. They deal with everybody kindly. They're interested in everybody.
Oh, yes.
Just visit. It doesn't hurt. Like I said, it's one of the cheaper conferences to attend. Hotels are not very expensive down here. You can get it as cheap as 20 or as high as 200. It just depends on what you want. It's a nice place to go visit. They got decent food down there, and the people are nice. What else can you ask for?
Very nice.
It's not cold, guys. Think about that.
It'll be very. Take your shorts and t-shirts. It's going to be very hot in July.
Oh yes, it will be. But you know what? I didn't find it to be that bad down there. But anyway, enough of that. Again, Yvonne, thanks for being on tonight.
Thank you very much, Joe.
And hopefully, I'll talk with you soon, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go take a break, and I'll be back in a few minutes. Until then, everyone, please stay tuned to UFO in the Cover. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Yvonne Smith, extraordinary researcher, and I'll be back in about 8 minutes. So, hang on. We're clear.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to UFO Undercover. Hope everyone enjoyed the first hour with Yvonne Smith. She's one of my favorite researchers and guests to bring on the show. She's a lot of fun to talk to. She's full of information. And actually, I'm looking forward to reading her new book, Chosen. It'll be up on our website for a couple more days if y'all want to go hit the link and click and buy it. And we'll see what happens. But, I'm looking forward to reading the book. Yeah, everybody knows I'm working on one, along with several other friends and members of ICAR that are working on their own. Eventually, there'll be several of them out there that information is based either by members or friends or associates of the organization, so that should be interesting. I don't know what it means, but it should be very, very interesting. I was thinking about this. I probably will have Yvonne and Melinda Leslie on in the future to discuss alien abductions and MILABS. They are friends. Melinda Leslie is a member of Zero, which is Yvonne Smith's abduction organization. That in itself should make an interesting show. There's a lot of good information to be had there. It's like when Melinda and I did Coast to Coast. We barely got to touch on anything that we really wanted to talk about. Because I know people think 3 hours is a lot of time, but really it's not. And when there's two guests, it's hardly nothing. It really isn't. And then when you throw in commercials and things like that, you end up with about an hour and 45 minutes. Excuse me. So it's really not that much time to split between two people. We got to talk about some of the stuff we wanted to, just not very much of it. MILABs are a very important part of the alien contact scenario. It's just a very new part. And it's going to take some decent research and some time to really work all this out and get this into a much better science than what it is. But, I work along with several other researchers on the MILAB cases myself, and contributes to a lot of stuff along with several other researchers that are friends of ours, such like Melinda Levy and some others. But the thing about it is it's not what I primarily do. It's not ICAR's primary goal. I mean, abduction research, alien abduction research, is our primary goal. And that is truly what we work on the most. But unfortunately, over the years, we've run into these cases that have to be investigated and checked on. And one night when I was interviewing Melinda, she brought it up. We got to talking about it. Actually, Leah Haley was the first one that mentioned it to me. And then Melinda, I had interviewed Melinda, and we got to talking about it as well. And it does seem to be going on. It's hard to say because, like I was saying when I was talking with Yvonne, there seems to be a couple of ufologists I know, or I should say abduction researchers that I know, that their people or their clients or their members haven't had MILAB experiences. Now, it is possible that they don't remember them, but it's probably not. The government's usually a little bit sloppier than the aliens are, so... I find that interesting that they have cases where, you know, groups where there's none at all, and then groups where there seems to be several contacts and groups. So, I mean, several MILABs in the group. These kind of things weird me out because there's no real reason for it. Now, yeah, granted, the group I work is much larger than most other groups are because I have the radio show and I have ICAR, and, you know, there's lots of researchers in ICAR, and we have lots of members and friends and associates and stuff like that. So, we have a much bigger abduction base to go by. I mean, granted, we're very lucky in that aspect. And somebody asked, matter of fact, it was very interesting. I had a phone call while I was at work yesterday from a friend of mine in the field. He's actually a very fairly famous ufologist, wanting to know what ICAR has been doing lately with abduction research and what we've been doing. Now, in all honesty to him, we've been doing a lot, but like I told him, myself, I've been revisiting a lot of past stuff because of personal experiences that have happened. I'll give you an example. Linda and I were out just a couple of nights ago. We weren't out doing any UFO stuff, by the way. We were actually out at the casino, at the Silver Slipper Casino in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. We had actually gone gambling. It was Sunday evening. We weren't doing any UFO stuff. We weren't even looking to be doing any UFO stuff, okay? We drove down in the afternoon, got down to the casino, gambled a while, lost. Not a lot, but still lost, and was driving home, and we were coming home. We decided to come home the back way, which is through the backside of Pearlington, Mississippi, and the Rigolets Pass in Louisiana, and Irish Bayou, and places like that. And anyway, we're back on Highway 90 somewhere, still in Mississippi, about 15, 18 miles west of the Stennis NASA facility, headed towards the Michoud NASA facility, which was in New Orleans. So at that point, off to the southeast, we seen what looked like a red glowing orb. Then out of that orb, it looked like there was a little red dot underneath it and one on each side of it, kind of like a little red glowing cross, but that's not actually what it was. You could actually make out that dot. Watched that for a few minutes, didn't know what it was. You know, it was kind of low. It was below the cloud deck, and the cloud deck was probably 10 to 12,000 feet that night. Watched it below the cloud deck, and then it just disappeared. Well, we enter Louisiana. We're coming into the Rigolets Pass, which is outside of Spiedel, Louisiana. And it's a little swamped-out area. Well, we hit the Rigolets Pass, and off to the right was the same thing, but it was white. It was a white dot with a white dot inside and one underneath. And we watched this thing for, it's an hour drive down this back road. So we watched it the whole time. It was moving slow. Not real fast, it was moving slow. Well, when we got to the Irish Bayou Chalmette Junction, I realized that this thing was headed east. So instead of headed towards the city of New Orleans where I live, I took a right and went up through Irish Bayou to try to get on the other side of it to take a look at it. Well, there's a boat launch back there. So we stopped in the boat launch because I didn't have any cameras but my cell phone camera with me. So I stopped with my cell phone and was taking pictures of this white light. Well, when I backed up out of the boat launch and got up on the highway's actually up on a levee. And when I looked out, there was three lights. Okay? There was three lights. Making a triangle shape. Well, at first I thought it was just three lights. But then I realized all three lights were moving at the same speed, at the same time, in the same direction. It was one big ship. Halfway over one of the blacked out areas of New Orleans and over the lake. And what I mean by the blacked out areas of New Orleans, Lakeview is still 70% vacant from Hurricane Katrina. And this time of night, there wouldn't have been anybody out there anyway. So it was halfway over that, halfway over Lake Pontchartrain. I've been waiting to see if anybody else has made any reports. This thing was huge. It was like the size of the city. At least the size. It was just phenomenally big. Somewhere between 2 and 6 miles across. I mean, the thing was huge. Lakeview, it was at least 2 miles inland from the lake, and it was at least 2 miles over the lake. It was big, whatever it was. And it was just kind of drifting along. And I mean drifting because, and this is the first time I've seen a craft this size that looks like it was drifting. Because it doesn't look like it was under propulsion. It was just like, had inertia going and it was just moving along like that. But then we watched it there for a few minutes. And then we come back up on the highway and got on the interstate and got to talking about it and was cruising 70 miles an hour towards the city of New Orleans due east. And it just disappeared. Poof, it was gone. And it's all open out there. It's flat and open so you can see for literally miles and miles and miles. And it was just gone. I don't know where the hell it went. I think it just went dark. I think the lights and all just went off and it just went dark. Because you could almost make out a silhouette of something black against the black. I don't know how many of y'all have ever experienced that. It's kind of weird when you do, but it was like black against black. It was blacker than the black. Or maybe it was just blotting out the stars. But you could still tell there was something there, but you really couldn't see it. So that was just weird. And that was just Sunday night. A couple of weeks before that, a weekend before that, we had some wild stuff happen to us down in Gulf Breeze. And the weekend before that, we had some wild stuff happen to us in Gulf Breeze. So, like I said, I've been doing a lot of personal stuff in the last few weeks, catching up with stuff, working on stuff, trying to figure out why some things are happening and some things aren't happening. I've also had a big influx of cases in the last few weeks. Ever since my first coast-to-coast interview, we get 2-3 cases a week, but since the second one, we've been averaging 7 or 8 people writing to us a week, sometimes 10 people writing to us a week about things that have happened. I'm not talking about people listening to this show. That's a whole different email address. All my email for this show and for the station goes to UPRN. What I'm talking about right now is iCard's email, which is icar@cox.net. And we've just been getting steady cases. Now, to the person who wrote me from, if you're listening, please write me back. Seattle, Washington, is 25, 28-year-old female. Those lights and those photographs, I'd like to talk to you about those. I found those really interesting. And then to my friend in Georgia that just wrote me, that's a very interesting case, so you know, keep in touch. I know I wrote back to both of y'all, but keep in touch because both cases are interesting and I'd like to keep up on. It's just been a lot of stuff going on, guys. There's a lot of it going on. And some of this stuff is what I call one letter. Someone will write to me or call me or contact me, and it's a one-time thing. Well, we only talk to them the one time, for whatever reason. Some of these are ongoing cases and probably will be ongoing cases for as long as this organization and myself are involved in it. I think even if I retired, as long as the organization was there, I think you would still see a steady caseload coming in. And it is a nice thing because it does give us advantage over everybody else. You know, Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs probably... We've probably got more cases in just in the last 6 months than they've worked on in their entire career. And if you start taking how long we've been around and multiplying that, we've done way, way, way more cases than they have. And it's not just them. There's just a lot of abduction researchers, and they're all doing good work. They just don't have the caseload that we do. And when I was talking with Darrell Sims about this in Houston, you know, he agreed that it's easier when you have more cases because you have more pieces of the puzzle. So I've been very pervy in the fact that we got lots of cases and lots of people in the organization that are abductees. And then I'm very lucky because I get to talk to all these other abduction researchers, so it gives me a very unique understanding of alien abduction. Whether or not it's the right one is yet to be seen, okay? Because we are speculating, or hypothesizing, I should say, since I'm taking my research, fellow researchers in the organization, and fellow researchers from outside the organization are using all their information to come up with coherent, workable theories. And they're pretty good theories, but they're all theories. You know, they're nothing more than that. They're just what they are. They're nothing more. There's no evidence other than eyewitness testimony and secondhand information. So, I should say secondhand. It's still firsthand because it's an individual, but it's not tangible and physical. So that makes things a little harder, but still. When John, the contactee from California, is telling you what Jane, the contactee from Sydney, is saying, that Chris, the contactee from Moscow, is saying, that Stephanie, the contactee from Mexico City, is saying, you got to wonder what the hell is going on today. We don't publish this stuff. I was talking with a friend of mine, Bill Burt, the other day. He's an ICARP member. He's a state director. I had let him know, and any of the other ones listening tonight, there will be quite a... I've decided, since we're doing this book, and I have to get with our national director and a few other members of ICARP before this is a final decision, but I am thinking of making 70-75% of abduction criteria available in this book and just picking a specific amount for specific things to keep out, key things to keep out, and that's just for us, the researchers, and not for any other things. We'll see how that goes. I am hoping, I got three more shows I'm going to do for this abduction series, and then, I have to tell you all this, the abduction series, once we start working on the book, the abduction series will no longer be available on the podcast, okay, and never will be available after that. So if you want to hear it, or if you want it, you better go get it now, because it will go bye-bye. And it may be made available as a set later on. But once we go into full-time work on the book, the podcast will no longer be available. So I just thought I'd tell y'all that. There's about eight of them over there that y'all might want to go download and keep yourselves. Or not, doesn't really matter. I mean, it'll be in the book as well. But the audio clips won't be available anymore. And there are some stuff in there that y'all might want to keep. Excuse me, guys. How are you going? They've been tired all day today. They've been working too hard. Now, while we're on the abduction subject, though, especially, let me ask y'all this. Let's say that you're average Joe or Jane American, or average Joe or Jane Australian, for that matter. You get up in the morning, you get in your car, you drive to work. You get to work, you feel weird, you feel like something's out of place, you wondered why you didn't stop and get your coffee and biscuit that morning, or whatever. But just all day you feel off. But as far as you can tell, nothing happened to you, you're just off. You get home that afternoon, you're talking to your wife feels the same way. Y'all are both like, well, what the hell? You go to bed, one of y'all wakes up in the middle of the night dreaming about the other one being tortured or something happened to him. And then you start telling him, and when you're telling him, the other one tells you, well, you know, I had a dream about that last night. And then, are y'all sharing dreams? Were you just abducted, or what is that? Well, since dream weaving is a physical thing, it is possible you shared someone else's dream, which you know, is possible, or you were picked up and taken, and that's just the memories left over, or the memories coming back, or what have you. But that's just everyday people. I mean, that's the ones that remember, say, at 25 or 30. The kids, there are kids that this never goes away for. For some reason, the aliens don't hide this stuff. At 5 years old, they'll have had contact. And maybe they dealt with it better than other kids. So, going into their teen years, they're still having contact, and the aliens are leaving at least partial memories behind. As they get into their 20s, they're leaving more memories behind. When they get in their 30s, they're not even hiding anything. As far as what they're doing with the individual, not what the aliens themselves are doing, but what they're doing with the individual, they don't seem to be hiding anything. It's a very select group of people. And I'm not sure why, but I'm sure it has something to do with the way they react or interact with the extraterrestrials themselves. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of that even works for that. It's kind of scary. Now, going back to something else that Yvonne and I were talking about, because I'm going to skip around a little bit here, because I'm kind of short on time. I think we're down about 20 minutes. We when you start thinking about the military thing, or the, and military is a bad word, because whoever's doing these abductions outside of the aliens are not military in the way we think of military, like black ops or government military. It's something else. It's a, I don't want to say it's a rogue organization, because they got to be working with somebody's blessing. But still, it's an organization inside of another organization, probably inside of two or three organizations. I'm sure it's well hidden and well deep down in there that are, they're picking these people up and backwards engineering them and trying to figure out what had happened to them when they were abducted by aliens and so on and so forth. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is I get a lot of email that people want to be mad about this. All right, granted, you can be mad about the government picking you up, but remember this. If the aliens weren't abducting you, the government wouldn't be abducting you either. Okay? So before you go getting all hacked off at the government, remember, if the aliens weren't abducting you, or if the aliens were being open about what they were doing when they were abducting you, the government would have no need to get involved. At this point, since the government does not know what's happening, the government has a need to get involved, and there is a need for secrecy. I meant to ask Yvonne if she thought we were going to have disclosure this year. But as far as I can see, there's still a need for secrecy. I don't think that the general population of this planet is ready for what ET is doing, or why they're here, or what their long-term plan is. I really don't think as a society we're ready for this yet. And I say that because we can't eat. Americans are supposed to be the most advanced society to ever exist on the face of the planet. And even we have a hard time getting along with each other inside of our own country. Now, we do it, and we do it better than a lot of other countries. Not the best, by any means, but we do it better than most countries do. And still, though, it's not even nowhere near 100%, and there is no country on this planet that could boast that there's a problem. So I can't see an alien race wanting to add to an already screwed-up society. I would think that they would maybe want the society to calm down, become more focused, become more real, get out of their fantasies. You know, most of the people in the world live in a fantasy. That's why there's so many TV stations now, because you can just crawl up on your, in front of your TV and stay there for hours on end. Most people live in fantasy. They go do their job, they come home, they eat, they watch TV. Or they take their kids somewhere, but they're not, or go to the mall. But they're not really living. They're not, you know, they're not reading, they're not exploring, they're not trying to understand their environment, they're not trying to change anything. They're just coming home, vegging out in front of their television. That's like 75% of the planet, guys. 65, 60, 70%, somewhere, a lot of it. And so I just don't think the aliens are going to be that forthcoming with. Now, if the government's going to be forthcoming, that's a whole different thing. I guess President Obama could say that he could, you know, the day of his inauguration, the day after, whenever for that matter, he could say aliens are real. First off, does he want to be the president that opens this can of worms up? Especially, you know, so that's the first question, is does he want to be the president that opens this can of worms up? Because once it's open, there's no more putting it back in the can. And then, literally, you're going to have abductees coming out of the woodwork wanting to sue the government. I know people are like, oh, no, that's not going to happen. Oh, yeah, that is going to happen. Unfortunately, you're going to have contactees coming out of the woodwork to sue the government for letting aliens abduct them. And if the percentage is as large as we think it is, our government can't handle that. It'll bankrupt them. They'll have to do something about it. They won't be able to. And then there's another problem. Let's say that President-elect Obama says, okay, ladies and gentlemen of the United States, aliens are real and they're living on our planet. Okay. My hand goes up instantly. Oh, Mr. Obama, Mr. Obama, Mr. Obama, what the hell are they doing here? Why are they abducting our people? And he goes, well, I'm not really sure. We just know they're visiting. Oh, shit, he just started the biggest panic riot that ever happened on this planet. The President of the United States, in front of the world, can never admit that he doesn't know what the aliens are doing, or he does not have the ability to stop them. Regardless, what every other country on this planet thinks, when push comes to shove, everybody looks at us. And if we say that, you just sent the world into a chaos it'll take decades, maybe centuries, to recover from. It's not anything that's going to happen overnight, because people will panic. You have to remember this. Individuals are intelligent. People in a group are not. They're panicking. If one guy gets out in Times Square and starts talking about what the aliens are doing and what's coming and what they're going to do to us when they all get here, you're going to have a panic like you've never seen before. Never seen before. It'll be like the same thing as if they said, oh, the asteroids come to kill us tomorrow. It'll be the same damn thing. That's what kind of chaos you'll see run across our planet. The only hope that we have is that the ETs come forward, meaning that, you know, John Gray calls Jane over at CNN and says, hey, I'm a gray alien. I want you to come down here so I can prove it to you. And then I want airtime on your network to tell the world what we're doing here and why we're here and why we're doing the things that we're doing. Then you might have a chance not to have a major panic. But even then, I think you're going to have a major panic. Because the religious section, which is still 60% of this planet, is not ready for extraterrestrials. And even the other 20 of the other 40% is just not ready for it. Right now, probably about 20% of the planet is ready for the truth, if that much. And that's kind of a high estimate. I know some people would say it was a conservative estimate, but I think it's kind of a high estimate. And I just don't think that we're ready for it yet. But I have to tell y'all in the same breath that I hope Stephen Bassett's right and there is disclosure this year. You know, it's a double-edged sword for me because I don't want to see my society collapse. I got, you know, children and grandchildren and even great-grandchildren now, so I want to see things go good and I want to see the world become better, but I don't think disclosing extraterrestrials is going to do it unless they're coming bearing gifts. Now, like I said, if Gray and Obama get together and they say, oh, this is what's going on, and we're going to give you medicine to cure y'all and make you live 500 years and blah, 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 then you've got a chance of maybe keeping it fairly stable. But I got to say, guys, I just don't see it happening. Oh, I'm sorry. Who, me? I'm going to be 46 in a few days. What is today? The 14th? In 8 days, I'll be 46 years old. To the person who just asked me that in the virtual auditorium. Yeah, I know. What can I say? Oh, because you heard me say about the great-grandchildren. Oh, okay. One day I'll explain that to all of you. I do have a great-grandchild. It's my granddaughter's son, actually. So on and so on and so forth. It gets way too confusing, y'all. But anyway, on January 28th, well, happy birthday to you, too. Now you see you got me sidetracked off of what the hell I was talking about. Now you got me thinking about the grandkids. I've been trying to use the grandkids as an excuse to fix my expensive boat. Yeah, I've been telling Linda, well, the grandkids are all moving to town. I need to fix my boat so I can take them out. She ain't going for it, those guys. I'm trying. But she ain't falling for it. Oh, anyway. Getting back to the disclosure thing and the extraterrestrial. And besides that, let's look at this a different way. Let's look at it a totally different way. Let's say that, for me, there's been disclosure, okay? E.T. told me they're here, so I don't need disclosure, okay? E.T. went and hovered over Mexico City for a full day. They don't need disclosure either. They hovered over Arizona all day, or the triangle was there. I don't know if it was all day, but it was quite a long time. How long was that Phoenix sighting, guys? A couple hours, right? 4, 5, 6 hours, something like that. So you got big black triangle hanging over Phoenix on it. I mean, that's disclosure, guys. What the hell else do we need? It's not just there. I mean, there's literally now probably 50 or 60 cities that have had mass sightings or big craft over. So, you know, what the hell? You know, what else disclosure do we need? We need E.T. to land on the White House front lawn and go, nanu, nanu. That's what we need. That's about the only thing that's going to work for most people. Americans are, or I don't want to say they're more skeptical. Arrogant might be a better word, because, I mean, arrogance in the fact that they think only their way is the right way. So, in that fact, they're just more arrogant. But some of the other countries, this isn't going to be as hard of a thing. I really think, like the French, or excuse me, a couple of the European countries, some of the Scandinavian countries, I think they're going to take this quite well. And I think it's going to do quite well there. And in the same breath, I think some of the South American and African countries and even some of the Oriental countries are going to take this very poorly. And it's going to be a big effing disaster along with some of the Middle Eastern countries. Out of the 100, I think it's 195 countries now, out of 195 countries, I would say probably 25, maybe 35 are ready for the truth. The other 160 are not. And it's going to cause a global panic on our planet. And we just don't need that right now. We've got enough headaches with what's going on in the world right now than anything else. You know, I was listening to a congresswoman today on the radio talking about because of these buyouts and payouts that our grandchildren are going to be paying back $3 trillion in loans because of interest. And everybody forgets it's $1.5 trillion that we're going to end up spending, but then we got the interest on that. It doubles from $3 trillion. We're not going to pay that back. I'm talking about my grants that might be paying 60 and 70% taxes over stuff we're doing. No, man, that's not going to work for me. So, you know, we have that kind of stuff going on now. We've got wars going on. We've got starvation going on, you know, and all over the effing planet. So I just don't think dropping the aliens, and I don't think it's going to solve all our problems. People tell me all the time, well, if they would just disclose, everything else on the planet would stop. Okay, guys, racism is not going to stop because of E.T. Fighting over your religion is not going to stop over E.T. Fighting over money and land is not going to stop over E.T. It might pull the planet closer together, but I don't know if it's going to pull it closer any better than the Internet has. Internet's done a pretty good job of pulling at least a good chunk of the planet together. I got to give it credit for that. Unless E.T. is a threat, unless they present themselves as a threat to this planet, it's not going to unite the planet. Matter of fact, if they don't present themselves as a threat, it's going to probably fraction the planet even more because people are going to be fighting to get to the extraterrestrials to try to get their technology, to try to get their attention. So that's going to actually cause the planet to fracture more. I don't think everybody's really thinking these disclosure things through really, really good. I think they're just wishful thinking, and people are not thinking about the recourse or what's going to happen afterwards. I just don't think they are. But I say this all the time. I could be wrong. And in this case, I hope I am. I just don't think I am. I really think that disclosure at this point is not going to be good for anybody. It's just not. The planet is not mature enough to know the truth. What really, to be honest with y'all, what makes me mad, best I can tell, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 years ago, E.T. seemed to walk openly amongst us. Today they don't. Now, that brings us back to something else. The hybrids that Yovan and I were talking about during the show. She brought up a good point about, you know, because this hybrid program has been going on for a long time. We don't know if it's been going on the full 6,000 years, but we know it's been going on at least for the last 50. And in that time, I'm sure they've got quite a few things out of it. It may have been going on longer than that. I'm just saying, we know for sure it's been going on the last 50. Now, some of these hybrids are probably getting to the point where they can interact and intermix with our society. That's why I asked her, does she think Obama is a hybrid? Because it's quite possible. At this point, I don't think it's really possible for him, depending on when they started their experiments. Now, if they started them 100 years ago, well, then yeah, it could be. But if they just started in the last 60 or 70 years, no, it's probably not. He's a guy who's got his hands full at this point anyway. Let's just say that and leave it at that, because anybody who's in his position right now has got to be thinking, oh, what the hell am I getting myself into? So that's why I think another reason that aliens, personally, and not to take anything away from President Obama, to be honest with you, I just think he has his plate too full to introduce disclosing. Now, if something happens, or if he can't pull off some of the things that he's been saying he's going to do, well, maybe then he'll disclose and take some of the pressure off him. But I just don't think it's going to happen. It just seems to be more of a hindrance than it does a good thing. But who knows? Who knows what it is and what it is. Also, too, speaking of that, to the individual who sent me all those pictures the other day, not the orb pictures, I should say, and I sent you those ones back. The ones I sent you back are from Isla Capri and at the hotel in Mississippi. It's from like the 7th floor. It was pouring down, raining that night. That's what all those orbs are—is reflections from the flash and the rain. Now there are some anomalies in that picture. If you look, there's two red spots and this weird squiggly line thing. I don't know what any of those are. But the rest of those ones that look like the orbs that everybody say are spirits or whatever—no, those are raindrops. The ones with the hexy polygrams inside of them, those are raindrops. And I got literally 100 or more pictures of them. I got several on New Year's Eve. About 10 years ago, the first time I ever seen an orb picture, New Year's Eve, it was misting outside, so I broke out the camera and started taking pictures. 1 year it was snowing, I was taking pictures. But anyway, make a long story short, you know, like 99% of those are oil, water droplets, and the light reflecting the water droplets. That's all they are. I'm not saying that's what all orbs are. I'm just saying what I'm talking about right now, those are just water droplets. Who knows? It's an interesting thing. You know, now that spheres, spheres. We see these like these golden and orange and red, blue. They're spheres. They're anywhere from like 10 inches in diameter up to the size of a Volkswagen or bigger in diameter. We think they're probes. Now, like the key word here is we think they're probes. We don't know. They don't look big enough to house an alien, even though there are one or two that might be big enough to house a single alien. They do act like probes. But those aren't orbs, those are spheres. They're different. They're like solid, metallic, or anyway, they're something solid, tangible object. Orbs are something entirely different. And most of the orbs, like I said, are just water vapor. I don't ever rule out everything 100%. You know, it's just... What are you, Tuesday? Are you a ghost under another name? Because you're the only person who would have asked me that question about ghosts. Sorry, somebody ironed me about, do I think ghosts are real? That's a loaded question, by the way, because they already know the answer to it. no, I'm not answered on this show. Okay, ask me later on. That's like trying to, anyway, I do think alien abductions are real, though. I think alien contactees are real. I don't think everybody who says they're an alien abduction is real by any means, but I do think they're real beyond any reasonable doubt. What was funny for me is actually as a researcher, I learned about alien contact and understood it as being a real phenomenon before I actually realized that I was a contactee, or an abductee, whatever you want to call it. We're talking 15, 18 years ago. I had no idea. I was just like every other dumb idiot out there who was being probed. You know, I remember having weird dreams as a kid, having weird abilities, having other weird things happen to me as a teenager, having really strange things happen to me. Here's one for y'all. Y'all tell me what y'all think about this. I know some of y'all are aware that I was just in the hospital just recently. I'm 45 years old, right? Smoked, drank, you name it. I was bad when I was young. One morning I woke up, felt a little lightheaded. Nothing was hurt, and there was no real pain or anything, just felt a little lightheaded. Linda got on my butt about going to the doctor. I said, whatever, feel bad tomorrow, maybe I'll go. That was Sunday night. Then Monday I didn't go. Tuesday I got up. Monday night I had a weird dream. Tuesday I got up, kind of had the chills, a little lightheaded, said, you know what, maybe I should go to the doctor. Went to the doctor. He said, you know, you're exhibiting signs of a classic heart attack. I'm like, what? Get out of here, doc. And get this, the SOB made me drive to the hospital. Yeah, tell you how much he was worried about me. So anyway, I drive to the hospital, I get to the hospital, they run all these tests on me, keep me overnight, run 5 million tests, get me upstairs, doctor, the cardiac specialist comes in, he says, you know, Joe, I don't think there's anything wrong with you, I think it was just really bad indigestion. I said, really, can I go home? He's like, no, we're going to keep you and do some more tests anymore just to be in the safe zone. And they run a whole battery of tests that day. Nothing wrong, couldn't find it, did ultrasound, all kind of tests, couldn't find nothing, so... Finally, the doctor said, I want you to do a stress test. I want you to go run for 6 or 7 minutes. I said, doc, you trying to kill me? I said, I'm 45 years old. I said, look, you're going to make me run for 7 minutes. So I'm jogging. About 4 minutes into it, the doctor lady says, I want you to sit down now. And she said, here, I want you to take one of these nitro pills. I said, no, I feel fine. She said, well, if it starts, I want you to take one of these. So I'm sitting there. She goes and gets the doctor. The doctor comes back and says, I think you got a carotid artery. I'm like, what the hell do you think I got a carotid artery? Okay. Next morning, they bring me in to run the camera up there to check to see what's going on. I've got in my right artery, it was 99% clogged. Okay, 99% clogged. I shouldn't even been alive. The doctor himself said he don't even know how I didn't have a massive heart attack and how I was possibly still alive. He just did not understand how I didn't have a major heart. And get this, the Friday before I went in the hospital, I was toting 5 gallon buckets up 30-foot ladders all day long doing roof work. All right? Now, this is a guy with an artery that's 99% clogged. Like you said, I should have had a damn heart attack and died on the ladder, but I didn't even feel bad, okay? Not even a little bit until that morning. So I went in. Well, they put a stent in. He checked everything else in my heart for the person that just asked. He said there was no damage to my heart. My heart was in good shape, and he didn't see any other clots in there of any consequence or anything like that. So he put a stent in, and, you know, I've got to stay on Plavix for a year, but and high blood pressure medicine because they want to regulate my pressure. And but the point is something or someone or somebody was watching or making sure something was going on because I should have been dead any other way. And the reason I bring this up is this isn't exclusive to me. When you talk to contactees, weird things like this are the norm. Some of them have had cancer go into remission. Some of them have had other stuff happen. But until they're either through with you or you serve your purpose, I don't think they're going to let you go. Until such a time that they no longer need you or you've served your purpose or whatever it is that they were waiting on, it's finished. It's really weird. It's really strange. But it does seem to happen to a whole realm of different contactees. And no, I don't know what it means. I just know that it's very strange. So I don't know. I do consider myself lucky to be alive. I thank the surgeon who fixed the valve, put the stent in. Grateful I don't have to have any other work done. Grateful I don't have to have any bypass done. Quit smoking cigarettes and changing my diet and even trying to get myself healthier so I don't have to deal with this as I get into my 50s. Because they told me if I would just, you know, do a couple of things, I could get off all the medications and not have to do anything. So I'm good with that. That works for me. But going back to what I was talking about, it just seems to be that contactees have, let me put it a different way, contactees have very strange luck, and we'll leave it at that, okay? Just very, very strange luck. Doesn't mean that I couldn't have a massive coronary tumor and kick over and die, or for that matter, get run over by a car and die, or any other thing for that matter. It just, at this time, they seem to have something else for me to do. And I find this a lot with contactees. And then I find something else interesting. A lot of the women contactees I know, especially ones that are in 60s and 70s, are very, very healthy. Exceptionally so for their age. I don't know. Could be good living, could be good probing. I'm not sure. But something's going on there. Just something to think about. You know, I know there's a lot. Well, you started a good probing comment. Okay, I see. Anyway, good living, good probing, something like that. Hey, you know, good probing makes the heart pump good. What can I say? No, do not email me about that. That was a joke to my wife. Y'all just behave yourself. I'll be getting emails for weeks. Anyway, we're getting ready to wrap this up. I hope everybody enjoyed Yvonne and a couple of things I wanted to mention this evening. I know a friend of mine wrote me and asked me how come we're not doing politics, but this is a UFO show, and I do like to talk about politics, just not on this particular show. And right now I don't have anybody to hate on. I'm kind of behaving myself with the politics thing until, actually I'm going to contact November Hansen about a month and get her to let me do an update on the Obama Nation. Y'all should be sure to tune in for that one. So if you have virgin ears, you won't want to attend this show. But anyway, guys, I really hope y'all enjoyed the show tonight. I'm getting ready to get out of here. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to UFO Undercover. If you have any ideas for the book or any information you'd like to share or any sightings or experiences you'd like to share, you can reach me at icercox.net. You can find other ways to contact me on the iCar website. If you have something for the radio station or one of the other shows, you can reach me at uprn@cox.net. It's all very even. If you're somebody new listening and you would like to know more about the show, you can go to www.paranormalradionetwork.com or to ufoundercover.com. If you're an abductee or contactee, someone who's got a sighting or just generally interested in ufology, you can go to www.icar1.com. That's the International Community for Alien Research. It's a 10-year-old abduction organization. I think it makes 2009. Yeah, 10 years. I know, huh? Dang, guys. It's been around for a while. Actually, it's technically about 8 years old. The members have been as a group for 10 years. But on that note, guys, I'm going to get out of here. Again, I want to tell everyone thank you for tuning in. Until next week, enjoy your life. Have some fun. Smile.